Oh, it is working, and it's very loud. It's a, jeez, there we go. Doesn't sound loud on the monitor. There, that's better. It's Radio Misterioso here on killradio.org every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Tonight, some weird music, but I'm also going to be talking with Jerry Majeski from Minneapolis. Well, he's actually north of Minneapolis now. Has been running a radio show called Musical Transportation Spree for probably the last 8 or 10 years. I'll ask him when I get him on the line. And he's a member of Mutual UFO Network up there in Minnesota, so we'll talk a little bit about that stuff too, and Strange Monsters Underground, and John Poindexter listening to this show and reading our email. But anyway, we'll be right back when I get a hold of Jerry here, and let me find some music so you don't get bored with Aleister Crowley and the CIA shortwave. Ooh, the Leuven Brothers is always good. Satan is real, and you'll know that soon. When the show starts here on Radio Misterioso.
Satan is real, working in spirit. You can see him and hear him in this world every day. Satan is real. Power, he can tempt you and lead you astray. I attended service at a little church in the country not long ago. A prayer was led by an old country preacher who then raised his hands as everyone stood and sang, "My God is real." A warm breeze through the open windows brought in the smell of new mown hay in a nearby field. And the singing of birds could be heard in the moment of silence as the preacher opened his Bible to read. And then a little old man stood up, bent with age, his hair thin and white, and said, "Preacher, tell them that Satan is real too. You can hear him in songs that give praise to idols and sinful things of this world. You can see him in the destruction of homes torn apart. I know that Satan is real, for once I had a happy home. I was loved and respected by my family. I was looked upon as a leader in my community. And then Satan came into my life. I grew selfish and unneighborly. My friends turned against me. And finally, my home was broken apart. My children took their paths into a world of sin. Yes, preacher, it's sweet to know that God is real, and to know that in Him all things are possible. And we know that heaven is a real place where joys shall never end. But sinner friend, if you're here today, Satan is real too, and hell is a real place, a place of everlasting punishment. Satan is real, working in spirit. You can see him and hear him in this world every day. Satan is real, working with power. He can tell you and lead you astray.
Can you hear me, Jerry?
Yes, I can, just barely.
Okay, I'll move the phone up closer to me. I think that's the only way you can hear me. We can't send the signal back down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So if I play any music, I'll have to put the phone up near the speaker.
Okay.
Just a sec. Try to cut some of the hum. There we go. Can we hear me?
Can we hear you?
Jerry?
Yes, I'm Jerry.
Okay, let me turn you up a little bit. How about that?
I'm Jerry. I am Jerry. I'm Jerry.
Jerry, I said you were from Minneapolis, but you're not living there right now.
No, I'm in the beautiful burg of Winona, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And Winona Ryder was named after this beautiful little city here.
Oh, really? Is that where your parents were from?
Well, no, they were itinerant hippies who were coming through town. They liked the name of the city, and so they stuck it on their little kid.
There's a song by Biff Rose right now that he just put out on his website called The Ballad of Winona Ryder. I think I had it on last week because a friend of mine had recorded it off the site.
Excellent.
I introduced you as first as the host of Musical Transportation Spree, at least formerly, and also a member of the Minnesota MUFON, and I don't know what your rank is. Is it journal subscriber?
Well, I'm a field investigator with Minnesota MUFON.
What do you do as a field investigator?
Besides investigate fields?
Yes.
Investigate hot spots that either have been visited by UFOs or talk to people who claim to have had UFO contact, or try to collect as much evidence as we can, and of course I'm interested in all those other side topics that we all know and love, involving, you know, the rest of the paranormal gamut, from ghosts to PSI to Bigfoot and you name it, and it's in that smorgasbord there.
I said PSI to Dean Radin once, and he got mad at me. What's that mean, pounds per square inch?
Yeah.
I was so embarrassed. I don't think he talked to me after that.
Okay.
Dean Radin's a parapsychologist who works at the, where is he at now? What's the name of that institute? It's in Northern California, like they all are.
Right, in Berkeley? No, not Berkeley, but Stanford?
It's not SRI, it's Institute of Noetic Sciences, the one founded by the astronaut.
All right.
Whose name
Edgar
I can't
remember
either.
Edgar Mitchell?
Yeah, Edgar Mitchell, that's it.
All right.
Whoa, maybe I should leave the equalizer on. There we go. I know what I wanted to ask about UFO investigation, which I don't know if you'd been asked this before, but when you go out and investigate, you collect data. What happens to the data, what's done with it, and how is it used to come to any kind of conclusion as to what's happened to somebody or what they've seen?
Typically with MUFON, there are forms that are created to kind of organize all that data. It's like a 3 or 4, sometimes even longer, depending on how involved the case is, of forms. You know, whether it's, you know, detailing the actual site that's been visited, or descriptions, measurements, everything that you want to include with that. Now, usually that's forwarded through the headquarters, which is now in Colorado.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is published in the main journal. Usually we stick it up on the Minnesota MUFON website and make it available there through our website or the local Minnesota newsletter, and usually share the research with the locals as well at an actual face-to-face meeting. You usually get together about once a month in Minneapolis-St. Paul area.
So what's done with the data? I mean, do they just examine it and say, because in all the time that I've been interested in UFOs, it's pretty much been collect data, see what it is, and then move on to the next one.
Right, and I think it's still a lot, quite a bit is not applied elsewhere, and I think in the future, I think people would like to be able to collate this in different ways, like ground traces, for example, so that people who want to see if there's any patterns there can do so. I think it just takes a lot of creativity, a lot of people's free time, who otherwise I have day jobs, and which I think probably includes almost everyone in MUFON, from the top to the little people like me, that we're all trying to hold on to our day jobs and doing this on the side. And so I think the ideal has not occurred yet, to make, you know, try and lump all this together and see if there's some connections or patterns besides just happening to notice a few from time to time, like, oh, this is coincidental, or why am I noticing, you know, this particular trait show up from this case, you know, to this other case, for example, or to see if there's any link between this type of object seen this time and this type of object seen another time, and it happens to be in Minnesota, you know, might be some connections there.
Okay, but nothing really earth-shattering has happened probably since, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago where Vallée and maybe some other people put sightings reports through a huge database where they actually had to use punch cards or those magnetic cards and found out that sightings peaked at 3 in the morning on Wednesdays or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Does that still hold true?
I wouldn't probably be the best reference for that question to answer that for sure.
Who would?
Probably John Schussler, the international head of International MUFON, who replaced Walt Andrus. Yes.
Is he still? He's still alive and fine, and
contributing
Texas
to the journal and all that stuff. Yep. Mm-hmm.
What's happening with all the MUFON files and all the records and all that? Are they
that all got moved from Texas, Seguin, Texas, to Colorado.
Really? They put them in a big moving truck?
A big moving truck and tons of boxes, and they moved them from Texas to Colorado, or I think it was... it was always kind of a wondering, well, I think that it just kind of moldered in Texas there, just due to the lack of motivation and people's time, and Walt Andrus getting old. And I think there's a lot more optimism now that it's in Colorado where John Schussler and his team, I think, are very, very keen on making the most of filing it in some kind of scientific, logical way and making it accessible, I'm sure, someday, you know, as these things take a few years to do, like some kind of database, I'm sure that the public and other researchers could access. I know that, for example, ground trace researcher Ted Phillips has been talking about this for years. You know, he's done hundreds and hundreds of ground trace cases, and he said, wouldn't it be wonderful to go to a website and be able to, you know, look at all this research? And he's mentioned that like 2 or 3 years ago, and it still isn't finished yet. So I'm guessing that people are building these like one tiny brick. You know, one tiny cyber brick at a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how they have to do it. I was just thinking that there's not really... After backing off from the UFO subject for a little while, I just noticed that not too much of it gets noticed by anybody outside the UFO subject until something interesting happens, or there's a show like that's Spielberg-produced thing on Sci-Fi Channel.
Right, Taken, or the Brian Gumbel-hosted look at Roswell...
That's right.
Right, and the controversy, the front page controversy over the cloning now involving the so-called UFO cult / crackpots who claim to be cloning humans. So it's kind of has bubbled up once again within the last couple of months, which kind of raises my eyebrows and other people who say this seems to be, you know, maybe something going on here, a little bit of a groundswell of some kind. We would hope that. Every few years we get kind of excited and saying, well, maybe this will be a big year for some big events or something, you know, that really captures, you know, just rivets people and kind of makes it difficult for the mainstream and the people who otherwise do ignore the topic, make it difficult for them to ignore it. And we're hoping that some of these things are those in-your-face type of things that involve major media people like Spielberg paying attention to the subject, and suddenly people go, well, golly, if, you know, America's favorite filmmaker, Steven Spielberg, is paying attention to UFOs again, what does he know?
Well, he's been paying attention to them since...
Right, since he was a kid, you know,
yeah.
but because...
Wasn't his first film a sci-fi UFO film?
Right,
that was. When he was like 13 or something?
Yes. So I think a lot of us are anticipating... that maybe there will be some big events this year that will spur greater attention to the topic. I think part of the attention that could involve government, you know, cover-up as people get more and more ornery about all the secrecy that, you know, we've got the most secret administration in office that we've had, you know, in modern history. I think a lot of people are chafing at okay, if we have to be secret about military matters, you know, let's be truthful a second about one thing. Let's talk Turkey about UFOs, you know, first. You know, then let's deal with the rest of this matter. Let's talk cover up first before things get too secret. So
yeah, but there's so much there to talk about with cover up.
Right.
UFOs is way down the list.
Right. But the Roswell thing seems to you know be a big flag. Everyone is very cognizant of, and that the Brian Gumbel special seemed to get a certain amount of attention. That the Sci-Fi Channel came out so strongly promoting it and promoting the whole idea that we needed to get at government secrecy. I mean, the actual people who run the Sci-Fi Channel seem to be very much into getting, you know, I guess getting the truth out there, whether it means like, you know, knocking on the more government doors or whatever, petitioning and blah, blah, blah. But they seem to be the first network to kind of take this no-holds-barred approach, you know, and then now they're running Taken, you know, the Spielberg miniseries. They're doing the Roswell thing. I'd say that it's the most unapologetic presentation, somewhat pro-UFO presentation I've ever seen any one network decide to take on, and I guess it figures it has to be the Sci-Fi channel to do so.
Well, that, and I'm sure that keeping too rabid of a skeptic off of the whatever, out of that dialogue helps their ratings too, which I'm sure they don't mind.
Right.
I got a letter from a rabid skeptic friend of mine, and he said the fact that the Raelians are failing in their attempts to clone somebody, making a big deal out of nothing, just shows how gullible UFO people are. And I still couldn't figure out for the life of me how he made that connection.
Okay.
He just said, everybody that's interested in UFOs is being fooled, just like the Raelians are fooling everybody where they're cloning. And I was like, well, that's a really large leap of logic there. But
right, and painting a lot of things in one color when I think it's a lot more subtle.
Yeah.
Than just this whitewash of move on bad, government good, or government bad, move on good. You know, it's simplistic.
I have to have him on sometime in the next couple of weeks, and then we could talk about it on the air and hash it out. I may be misrepresenting exactly what he said, but I thought that was the gist of it. Did you see any of Taken?
Yes, I've watched quite a bit of that.
What was your assessment of it?
I really enjoyed the first three episodes. I thought the fourth one sucked because it was kind of like an ersatz Blair Witch Project or an extremely slow-moving episode of The X-Files, and I should say poorly written slow-moving episode of The X-Files, but I think it has a lot to recommend for it. It kind of cobbles together a lot of theories about UFOs that have been floating around for some years, and puts it in the form of a soap operatic primetime TV continuing miniseries type of format, which is interesting to see. Then mixing up the human drama with the idea that various main characters occasionally get abducted, and some of the characters you see pop up in this human drama are not even humans. So, but I think there's a lot to recommend for it, and I think having, you know, been around when Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out many years ago and got very excited, and then saw nothing happen. In fact, UFO interest kind of just dropped way down after that movie came out, which I guess proved one thing to all the skeptics who said, because of Close Encounters of the Third Kind coming out, there's going to be tons of sightings, and they're all going to be just because of this movie, and it's all going to be either hoaxes or people misidentifying things, and nothing of that kind happened in 1977, 78 when that movie was out. And in fact, in interest in UFOs and publications and organizations who were trying to get by saw their membership dwindle in the years that followed that movie. So
just
I guess
like recently.
Pardon?
Just like recently.
Yeah, and so now I think this maybe something like this is at least stirring up the pot. Anyway, and then with Art Bell retiring and people wondering, well, who's going to fill their shoes? And so we'll see who the players are for 2003 and beyond. But I wanted to take a minute, Greg, to talk about one of the players that we here in Minnesota, and I should say the whole of ufology, have lost in the last 2 weeks. One of our dearest and finest researchers has met an untimely death in the last week while he was out doing a sporting winter activity. A local UFO researcher by the name of Casey Holt met an untimely death recently when he was visiting his family. And if I could take a moment here, Greg, and share with your listeners a tribute that a fellow UFO researcher in Chicago, Susan Murawski, wrote a tribute to Casey Holt, who is a researcher who had passed away. And Susan wrote that, "I am emailing you tonight with a sad heart. A very dear friend of mine and one of the UFO community as well was found dead this weekend. His name was Casey Holt and was a member of MUFON up in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. He was visiting his parents in Green Bay and disappeared on Christmas Eve. His body was found this weekend when they dragged the lake near his parents' home." And I'll add as a sidebar here that Casey was apparently skating and fell through the ice, and unfortunately he was alone, and nobody found him for quite a number of days. I'm continuing with Susan's tribute to Casey now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you this with hope that you may consider reading this tribute to him on the air. I'm sure many of your listeners who have attended seminars that are put on by MUFON and other groups exploring the paranormal, especially gatherings in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, and Laughlin, Nevada, have had a chance to meet and talk to this very unique and wonderful individual. Not only was he a relentless seeker of knowledge, but a true hands-on investigator of the paranormal. I never once saw him without his many cameras, video equipment, or other devices, many of which he invented himself, which he used in in-depth and thorough investigations he was so famous for. The world has truly lost a great humanitarian, and what I hope for my dear friend now is that he has finally found the answers to all the questions they had so boldly sought the answers to in this life and the one that lies beyond. And I share Susan's sentiments that we will never forget Casey Holt. And I will add to that what he brought to the research of crop circles, which he actually went out and investigated hands-on a number of crop circles in the Minnesota and Wisconsin area. The measurements, taking samples, renting he and his buddies, chipping in money, renting a plane to do aerial shots, sending up, invented a little device that he would float a balloon above a crop circle and be able to take pictures from the air by attaching his camera to the balloon.
Mm-hmm.
We went out on a couple of Bigfoot treks. I didn't see anything, but it was certainly fun to go out with somebody of Casey's caliber, a guy who really knew how to find his way around in the wilderness and the woods, and a good outdoorsman. And he also had a terrific, clever sense of humor, too. And one of those nice blends of serious researcher and good tongue-in-cheek sense of humor as well to go with that. Not everything had to be textbook serious 100% of the time, that we could have a lot of fun going out on some of these treks, dealing with the topic, speculating, BSing about it, just kind of blowing the lid off off of it and seeing what's down there. And Casey was good at scratching at the surface and continuing the scratch. He was curious as hell as the rest of us and was pretty tireless
I met him. I met him the one. I think that one time at the UFO, the MUFON convention in Irvine.
Right, in Irvine. That was just almost 2 years ago. I should say about a year and a half ago now that we had all gathered for that. And
and I was struck that he didn't have this, like, you know, we have to find the aliens thing that you would usually ascribe to some, you know, there's not too many people, surprisingly, there's not too many people that you meet that are like that, but he was really careful to consider just anything, even how silly it might be, even if it seemed funny to other people, like you said. I mean, not even as a sense of humor, just in that don't discount anything because it's all so weird anyway.
Right, and he, in his quiet kind of way, was a magnet for people, you know, who would want to share their stories, or he'd befriend these people, manage to listen, or I guess transcribe what it was they're telling him, making, you know, connections with these people in the UFO and research community that was pretty remarkable. I give him a lot of credit for the things that he had done, like I say, especially with some of the crop circle research that he'd done, and also researching ghosts. You know, he had been very interested in you know, rigging up these devices, the so-called, you know, ghost catchers or ghost detectors. I think that technology fascinated him. He's just sad that he's one of these guys languishing in a low-paying electrical engineering job. You know, this is the type of guy you would have wished to throw, you know, a huge grant at and say, all right, put some of this knowledge to use, you know, or give him the high-tech ghost, so-called ghost detection equipment, or the means to build his own, and let that guy go to town.
Speaking of having a sense of humor, I found a copy of that Jimmy Durante, We're Going UFOing.
Okay.
You've heard it, though, right?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm amazed in that, yes, a song by Jimmy Durante about going UFOing, which probably came out in about 1965 or 66. But I like how he mentions, you know, one moment we're in Mexico, next that we're over Idaho.
Right.
And I know that both Mexico and Idaho play prominently in many, many, many UFO stories and sightings over the last 50 years.
That's true. Wait, let me see if I can get your phone near the speaker enough so that it doesn't feed back and you can hear this, and we'll be right back in 2 minutes and 26 seconds with Jerry Majeski.
If you want to get a thrill, if you want to see the sights, jump right in. I got an unidentified flying object. Yeah! Let's go for a spin. We're going UFOing. We're trying salt supply. We'll glide across the skies. Nobody will believe their eyes. Just when they think they've seen us, we'll zoom away to Venus. One moment we're in Mexico, like that we're over Idaho. Just tell me where you want to go in my UFO. Going UFOing, we're trying salt supplying. We'll glide across the skies. Nobody will believe their eyes. Just when they think they've seen us, we'll zoom away to Venus. One moment we're in Mexico, like that we're over Idaho. Just tell me where you wanna go in my UFO. Going UFOing, we're trying salt supplying. We'll glide across the skies. Nobody will believe their eyes. Just when they think they've seen us, we'll zoom away to Venus. One moment we're in Mexico, like that we're over Idaho. Just tell me where you wanna go in my UFO. We're going UFOing. Salt supplier, we'll glide across the skies. Nobody will believe their eyes. Just when they think they've seen us, we'll zoom away to Venus. One moment we're in Mexico, like that we're over Idaho. Just tell me where you wanna go in my UFO.
Whoa, amazing. Just a sec. Jerry, you still there?
Yes, I am here.
Okay.
Wherever he is, I guess that's kind of relative.
It's always relative.
I'm in the land of Mysterioso right now.
Yeah.
Radio Mysterioso.
Every week from 8 to 10, that's where I am. Unless I'm not paying attention or I'm on CD or something. But then I'm here in spirit. Actually, I don't think I've missed a show yet in a couple of years. Which, I don't know what that indicates. It indicates a lack of other things to do or an extreme dedication. Which, by the way, for variety and weirdness and quality of music, I can think of no better show than Musical Transportation Spree, which ceased broadcast when?
It would be midnight Central Time, Friday nights, i.e. early Saturday morning.
Oh, it's still on.
Uh-huh, at www.kfai.org. That's kfai.org. So, yes, internet broadcasts, public, or I should say community-supported open radio from Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Are you still working with Musical Transportation?
Not as often as I used to, but yes, I'm still involved with that, and we still do UFO and paranormal updates fairly often enough. So,
oh, that's
yes,
great. I for some reason I got the impression that it had gone off the air for a while.
I left the show as a regular host, but my regular co-host carried it on along with his new partners that he had acquired and installed to kind of do a little rotating lineup, kind of like the old NBC mystery movie or something like that. A lazy Susan, if you will, of radio hosts now man the Musical Transportation Spree microphones. So,
wait, could you give the time and place for that again?
It's www.kf, like in Frank, AI.org, and that's midnight Friday nights, i.e. early Saturday mornings, for 2 hours until
Central
2 a.m.
Time.
That's Central Time Zone, that is. We interpret that for if you're in a different zone, so to speak.
I'm just trying to ingest something here now on the station since I'm engineer, host, and everything else.
You wear many hats then.
Yeah, that they all keep falling off too. What else was it? Oh, the fact that the Raelians had said they'd cloned somebody, and the interest that had brought up, and I like I said a little earlier, I just heard that they refused any authority to take a DNA sample off the baby, yet that it was okay to take one from the mother, which I don't think really doesn't prove anything.
True.
If that's indeed what's going on right now in that staged event at that stage.
Right. It's definitely going to then cast a lot of doubts or increase the doubts that are already there by the people who say, prove it now. Now that you've made the claims, prove it. Well, it sounds like we're being so far prevented from proving it, at least in terms of DNA, which would be pretty conclusive, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's. I think that's the only method we have now to do such a thing.
To do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's... We can't use fingerprints. We can't. Anyway.
Greg, what can you add about that cult that we haven't really read about? I seem to remember Jacques Vallée reading or writing about them many, many years ago. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but at least I recall Vallée, perhaps it was in Messengers of Deception, anticipating a time when a UFO cult such as this or
Heaven's Gate
would appear and wield a lot more influence and power and appeal than what we would estimate at first. You know, they would first be dismissed as completely crackpot and totally out on the fringe. But I was amused to see that the Raelians had at least enough clout to try and do a scientific project like this, and they have an amusement park, UFO Land, in Montreal.
Oh, they did build that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was mentioned every time in the papers, and I thought, wow, I want to go there. What? Talk about photo opportunities. Yowza.
I wonder how much it would take to get permission to shoot a video there or something. It's probably already been done.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think they started in the mid to late 60s when the race car driver and or race car journalist Claude Vorilhon, Vorilhon, said that he'd met some silver-suited man from I can't remember where he was from another galaxy, another star system, in the French Alps, in the Pyrenees, I guess, as recounted in the book, the incredibly wonderful book, Space Aliens Took Me to Their Planet.
Do you have a copy of that book, Greg?
I have a copy of that book signed by Rael.
Okay, because I would, if not tonight, or if at some future point, get back to me, because I noticed in the media coverage of him, every time they talked about his contact with aliens, they would say he met little green men. And I've kind of found out, well, I wanted to know first, is that literally true? Were they green? Or is this the major mainstream media's way of throwing, using a little catchphrase which equals nut, you know, as in,
yeah,
mention the word, somebody saying little green men, and we've had, you know, the last 50 years, that's sort of been code word for crackpot.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think he is probably pretty nutty, but he's also pretty sharp too. If you can get all these people to follow him,
right?
And that's also very interesting to those in the know and in power, because I like to know how that is done and how to get people to listen to you and how to give up everything for this cult or this group. Or I don't say cult. I really think it's a bad word.
Right. I agree. I didn't mean to use that.
Religion, whatever. Oh, I didn't even notice you using it. I just thought, I don't say cult. I say group or religion or whatever. I think they got popular really early on because they had this thing called sensual meditation, which was basically an excuse for everybody to have sex. And that's a pretty good recruiting tool. I'd go down and attend one of their meetings. and then recently, taking a huge jump, I guess in the last year, Miles Lewis from the Elf Infested Spaces website and Austin Paranormal News told me that they had somebody in Canada, maybe it was Rael because he's there, had told their members to start burning crosses to rebuke Christianity. I was thinking, well, that's a really weird thing to do. I mean, burning crosses has a kind of a bad history in this hemisphere. So I don't know if that was true or why they were doing it, besides for the obvious reason, like I said, to rebuke the Christians. But I always thought they were all, you know, kind of peaceful and live and let live, but now it seems like they're kind of getting uppity and in your face, much as Valet had predicted. I don't know if, you know, if they can't. The problem with these groups is if they try to make a stab at mainstream, you know, respectability or popularity, it doesn't work because they're working with a set of rules that don't apply to the rest of society. So to us, they look totally insane. And, you know, they probably, you know, all the people have jobs, this and that. In fact, a lot of people lump in people that are in MUFON and UFO groups with these kind of UFO religions and groups and cults, if you want to call them that, which is unfortunate. You know what's very funny is that when I go visit the Aetherius Society here in Los Angeles, the person that took over for George King, the original founder of Aetherius, every time he sees me, he says, "Hello, Greg, how are you doing?" And he always wants to look at a copy of this magazine I put out, and like any like weird UFO scuttlebutt that's going on, because not only is he totally into his religion, he wants to know what the Space Brothers are doing, you know. Well, how are they manifesting themselves to the populace? Because he you know, rightly so, he thinks he only has one little small view of it, based on his group's view of it. But he really wants to know more, which I also think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, as far as you know, that the head of the Raelians, he met a silver suited alien.
I think he was silver suited, but I don't know what the color of his skin was. I don't think he was humanoid looking, though. I mean,
the jury will be out at least for until you and I hit the books and come back to see if indeed they were little green men. Maybe they were, but it just sort of like it just didn't smack of complete research, just to kind of mention casually in every newspaper article on the founder of this group, you know, that
well, you know,
and he met little green men.
Yeah, you know how newspapers work. They copy things off each other. That's all. Like, one person looks it up on the net, and the rest of them just copy it from the last guy.
Right.
And that's not just UFO stories. That's with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just about. And you notice that when you read, start delving into the news a bit. Mm-hmm. I actually... speaking of strange books by UFO people, I stopped buying them for a long time. Then recently I went to a place out in Yucca Valley, and they had Gabriel Green's library, or part of it.
Wow. Was he the fellow who ran for president?
He ran for president on the prior choice economics ticket in 1960. He ran against Kennedy and Nixon.
Yeah.
And he got something like, he got what, 200,000 votes or something in California? He must have rallied a bunch of people, or a lot of people didn't care that he was the founder of the Amalgamated Flying Saucer Clubs of America to get that amount of votes. I found another contactee's book, Orfeo Angelucci's book, one of his books signed to Gabriel Green.
Great.
It's just, you know, to my friend and all your help in bringing the message from our you know, our space brothers or something, you know, cordially, Orfeo Angelucci.
Speaking of the space brothers spin, now, did you watch Taken at all yourself and any of the earliest episodes when they were alluding to the 1950s and the space brother movement?
Yeah, I saw a couple of those.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. They tried to imply that at least some of the people who were spokesman for the who claimed to be in contact with the Space Brothers were actually government agents trying to add confusion and doubt to the mainstream view of UFOs by, you know, getting up and making people talk about silly things like so-called silly things like aliens as Space Brothers.
I'm almost certain that happened. I'm sure it's not the entirety of the phenomenon, and I don't think all those people were deluding themselves.
Right, and nor were all of them, you know, secret government agents, but some of them may have been.
Yeah, in fact, in research for this book, I'm learning more and more that some of the obvious things about how there are a lot of things that the U.S. government works on, particularly to do with weapons systems and flying systems that they'd rather not know about, and the only place they have to test them with on sovereign soil is here in the United States. And occasionally people see these things.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they may be, it's to their advantage to get people to report UFOs, because immediately nobody cares about them anymore except the UFO community.
Right.
And that's happened time and time and time and time and time again. And some of these things, you know, probably have a really huge, some sort of electromagnetic field around it, and screws up people's heads, and they got to cover up that, and it just become, you know, it becomes a vicious circle.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to come out and admit it, because there'd be lawsuits, etc., and then they'd have to sort of try, kind of, you know, reveal, or, you know, even maybe more telling, not reveal what they're doing out there in the desert or the woods or whatever. Actually, that Cash Landrum incident always comes to mind, where those two women were burned and had radiation burns and poisoning, and one of them died of cancer a few years later after seeing this diamond-shaped flying thing with a jet shooting out the bottom of it. Then it was surrounded by helicopters. And obviously, there's something weird going on there. It's definitely an unidentified flying object, but for the people that were in the helicopter surrounding it, it was definitely they
probably knew what was going on. Still there, Jerry? Jerry? Well, Jerry's gone. He got cut off. Or he got bored with me. Let me see if I can get in touch with him again. And
hi, Greg.
Oh, what happened?
I don't know. It happened before, about 15 minutes ago, when suddenly it went quiet on my end and I didn't hear a thing. And then, just like now, it just suddenly popped back.
Huh.
So, as though you had an incoming call, but that was a real long pause there.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't hear anything, so I just thought, I'll just be patient.
Okay, I was just about to try and call you back. I was talking about the Cash Landrum incident and the two women that were burned with radiation by that diamond-shaped thing with the helicopters around it,
right.
And how that... while most people, if they had not been burned, would have just looked up and said, look at that strange flying thing in the air. It must be one of them there flying saucers.
Right.
But these women were actually physically affected and made sick, and one of them died from it. And obviously it was something that humans knew about specifically because a bunch of helicopters were around there, and they knew what was going on, or they had a pretty good idea.
Right. And that's a good one. That's a very good case. I've interviewed the primary investigator, John Schussler, about that case, and he's done a lot of work on that and really tried to help the women bring their case forward, but the government shot it down at every turn. They didn't want to deal with that. They don't want to deal with that family. Either they just treat them as like casualties of an experiment, or something weirder went on there. As you and I, I think, have perceived in a lot of cases, there was an object there. There were military helicopters, but there were 15 military helicopters that were buzzing around this thing. So there should be 15 crews of 15 different helicopters who got as sick as the women did who watched it in that car. The 15 helicopters and their movements beg credulity.
Mm-hmm.
It takes on a very Oz effect to read the entire story and to say, well, there could be a mundane explanation to this, as many UFO cases, one can start to ascribe some mundane explanations, but there's some very bizarre, surrealistic touches to it.
Oh, like what? Because it seems very cut and dried to me. There was something that was powered by some sort of nuclear engine, and it got out of control, and these women just happened to be there out in the middle of nowhere at this time when it was flying by and in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of weird components of the case have you heard about? Why
weren't there? How could there have been 15 helicopters buzzing around this item? When it did so much destruction, it melted the road that it came down on. So it should have, like, melted the helicopters.
Well, it should have melted the people in the car, too, but probably
right.
The helicopters, one, stayed far enough away, and two, most of the heat was directed downward, which is why it melted the road, and why they were flames shooting out the bottom. At least that's what they reported.
You might want to talk with John about this case, because he says that and he's worked part of his background is working with NASA and various flight systems, and he and his blue panel bunch that he got together said this doesn't make any sense. You want to say it's something nuclear, but there's things that aren't adding up about it that do not make any sense if you go over it detail by detail.
Well, there's going to be a lot more details before I think it's that weird. I mean,
as you get away from
something radioactive, the further you get away, the radioactivity decreases exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're 10 feet away from it, you're probably going to get 100 times the radiation than if you're 20 feet away from it.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing, but I don't know all the details. Well, I can't begin to know all the details, which you've actually heard, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. I think it would make an excellent movie.
I
think somebody like with a consciousness, a social consciousness, should take it on, because their case is a very sad one, and that it resulted in death and a lot of suffering on the part of the witnesses,
right.
And they never got any help other than from some independent people. They were one of them died, as a result of this whole incident and suffered.
Most likely,
yeah.
She got cancer.
Yep.
very fast-acting cancer. Wasn't there... Didn't Peter Gersten try to bring the case to court?
Yeah, he did. In fact, John was involved with that, and they dismissed it every time.
Now, let me...
I guess they found some... The judge who even decided that kind of even came on TV ahead of time before even making his verdict and kind of acting like he was going to dismiss it anyway. And it all looks really suspicious.
Well, what I had heard from that case was that Gersten had tried to run the defense in a way that was had to do with a UFO cover-up and not to do with their injuries and the effects on the direct effects on them specifically as the case,
there
which seemed
be,
to have
there,
been
there
a stronger
some
case
going on there because he never showed up for the when it came to actual time to bring it to trial.
Gersten
he didn't show up for it, and in fact some other people had to kind of be there in his stead. So I don't know if there's any schism going on behind the scenes there, why he wasn't actually present, or did real business call him away that he couldn't make it. So I can't recall all the details behind the scenes on that. But I think it's worth reading the book, and you get pretty involved in the human drama that goes on there, whether or not it was a government experiment gone awry or something else. The point of the people and their suffering, and they're not being acknowledged and being ignored and shoved aside, despite all the evidence and all the screwy goings on, the runaround they were getting from people who should otherwise been very helpful to them. It was pretty sad.
Are two of the witnesses still alive?
Right.
I think the older woman is still alive.
Yeah, the older woman and the little boy who is now a grown-up young man.
Uh-huh. And
they don't want to. They are so tired of being physically sick and just the mental anguish they went through. They don't want to deal with it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, they actually stayed in the car and they got a lot less of a dose of radiation.
Right. And like the other lady who actually walked outside the car, looked up at it. I think the others did too. I think the lady. One of the ladies, you know, was stared at it a long time because they thought they were seeing a religious vision, and they thought it was good to look at, you know.
Uh-huh.
I should look at it's God coming back. I should look at him, you know. But
doesn't it say everywhere
in
the Bible not
to
look at the... Doesn't it say everywhere in the Bible not to look at the Lord when he shows up?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. In their case, it proved very fatal to stare at this vision, so...
Mm-hmm. It's very
noisy. You're on a busy street there, aren't you?
Yeah, we're right over Vermont Avenue and Beverly Boulevard, which is a very busy intersection. So I have to close the windows, which makes it stuffy in here. But
wait, are they coming for you yet? Or is this,
No. I didn't do anything wrong yet.
Okay.
Oh, you know, speaking of doing things wrong, I've been in my research here trying to do this book on this guy who was driven crazy by the government. I met some guy who started telling me Dero stories, but they're not from they're from the 50s, and they have to do with the government, not with the Shaver people or Raymond Palmer or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Deros were the underground race.
Underground race that lives underneath the earth in large caverns. Apparently, there's underneath the guy I talked to briefly said, "Remember underneath the earth in Carlsbad, where Carlsbad caverns are, they found like a bigger cavern a few years ago." And I said, "Yes, I do remember that." He says, "Well, that cavern complex is huge and it stretches all the way into Arizona." And some people were learning how to. Go in and out of those caverns, and I guess they encountered something that killed somebody. Anyway, I don't know how much stake to put in the story, and you hear these kind of stories all the time, but it doesn't really have much to do with what I'm writing the book about. But I didn't know that subject would come up again, and it comes up in the weirdest ways, some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
You just think, well, this is a silly story somebody made up, and then you realize that a lot of a Native American and indigenous people's history has to do with people coming up from out of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that being the origin of man, and that still being true, that there's still people living there, and they just want to be left alone, and when we leave them alone, if we're smart, by living up here. So it's just strange to me to hear that this theme weaving in and out of things every once in a while. Well, just when you think it's a stupid story some crazy person told, because he said that, what did he say? Richard Shaver said that the voices spoke to him through his welding equipment and told him about the story about the underground races. Which is another great story, which might make a good movie, too, if not a good book. Well, already has made a good book.
Absolutely.
You remember that CD that you lent me that I finally sent back to you of Miss Flying Saucer?
Right. It was a compilation of all UFO and Flying Saucer songs, and yes.
And I've played the crap out of it, but is there something on here that you'd like to hear?
Oh, my. Let's see. I think I've got my copy at my fingertips here, and I can take a look at the contents here, but I know one of my favorite cuts on there is I like Ain't No UFO Gonna Catch My Diesel by Joe Dolce.
All right.
I believe that I have that listed here as cut number 16.
Okay. Crank it over to 16 here, and we'll let hear people hear Ain't No UFO Gonna Catch My Diesel here. And we'll take a breather, and we'll be back with... Whoa, I went past it. We'll be back with Jerry Majeski here in... what's the length on it?
The length on that one is 2:53.
Okay, we'll be back in 2:53.
Okay.
And continue this with Jerry Majeski here on Radio Mysterioso.
Howdy. I'm Big Joe Texas, and I'd like to tell you something that happened to me out on the highway the other day. The sun was setting out on the dust of Texas Turnpike. I was just about a mile from the Oklahoma line. When all of a sudden, between you and me, I saw a flying saucer. Swear to God, nearly caused me to collide. Well, pull up right alongside of my semi. Yeah, saw a little green man with a smile on his little green face. He said something to me, sound like Chinese or something. I couldn't figure it out. By the look in his eye that he wanted a race. Huh.
Ain't no UFO gonna catch my diesel. I don't care if it came from outer space. Ain't no UFO gonna catch my diesel. Because there ain't no machine gonna take its place.
My foot to the floor and we got trucking. We were neck and neck about a mile or so. But I guess his rig couldn't hold up to my eight-wheel drivers. Cause when I turned around, I left him in a cloud of smoke.
Ain't no UFO gonna catch my diesel. I don't care if it came from outer space. Ain't no UFO gonna catch my diesel. Machine gonna take his place.
You can believe my story if you want to. You can say I'm crazy and I lost my mind. But come with me sometime on a run to Texas. Because wait for me down there by the borderline.
UFO gonna catch my diesel. I don't care if it came from outer space. Ain't no UFO gonna catch my diesel. Because there ain't no machine gonna take its place.
Jerry, you there?
I am still here, right?
Okay, great. Whoa! There we go. I was hearing the next track coming on. Actually, never mind. We'll play it later. Have you ever heard a song called You better pray to the Lord when you see those flying saucers by the Buchanan brothers.
Yes.
Oh, you have.
Excellent song.
Yes. Okay, we'll play that some other at some other point in this show. We're on here with Jerry Majewski, member of Minnesota MUFON and host of a great radio show, at least occasional host, called Musical Transportation Spree, which is on KFAI in Minneapolis, which can be accessed how? Here, just mention it again.
www.kf, like in Frank Zappa, AI.org, www.kfai.org on the Friday nights at midnight to 2 a.m.
Central Standard Time Zone. Yeah. In the course of working on this book, I found a lot of things that were flying around in the UFO community in an embryonic form, like in the late 70s and early 80s. Things about abductions, the very first, wave of hypnotic regression and abduction research and all that happened, I guess, around 76, 77. People like Leo Sprinkle started interviewing people and hypnotically regressing them, and these strange stories started coming out. And it grew into this huge cottage industry and an incredible phenomenon, and culminating in this Taken presentation on Sci-Fi Channel about a month ago now.
Right. Now, I'm kind of curious. It seems as though, when I'm looking at Taken, I can see a very Americanized view of looking at the ufology there. We're definitely being presented with, it's the grays, it's the scrawny little gray guys, and but in the meantime, I don't know if you heard about one of these cases that's been bubbling up from, I think it's Rio de Janeiro. Some contactee there has had some pretty graphic encounters with some, I believe they're like red-haired aliens. It's definitely, aliens of the stripe that are not the type that are reported in America, only in other countries besides America do we get the really eccentric-looking, surrealistic, look like they stepped out of a Fellini movie type aliens. and I thought, now how do I square this with everything that I'm absorbing in Taken? If Spielberg is trying to drop hints here, why are people in other places of the world like France and Italy and the South American countries, why are they seeing square-headed robots and red-haired aliens and green-skinned women and
hairy dwarves and things shaped like bananas, terry cloth-type skin and stuff like that.
Yeah, and strange shapes of objects that make no sense, no aerodynamic sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Flying toasters and things like that.
Refrigerator-looking things.
How do I square this with this possible idea that it really is, hardware that fell from the earth, that fell to the earth, created by Grays, or was that just their hardware, the hardware of the red-haired aliens or the green-skinned Venusians just hasn't fallen in our laps yet. It's just one of the many UFO.
Conundrums
that are visiting us. We just happen to get some of the grays.
How does the UFO community square all these strange sightings and different things from different countries and even different regions, especially in some places in like Brazil, where people don't have really any televisions or go to the movies, and still at least in the last 10 or 20 years, and they were being killed and melted and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least made sick and chased through the forest by these things that were about the size and shape of large refrigerators with lights in them.
Right.
We don't hear about that in the United States, and I was always wondering why. And you search your mind or your logic or anything you've read, and maybe John Keel would say something once in a while that or Robert Anton Wilson or anybody like that would say something like, well, there's a strange thing there. It's like the Jung quote, something is seen but nobody knows what. And depending on however your society sees something, that's what that bundle of energy is, what is downloaded and formed by your mind into whatever that memory should be, or whatever you can accept sitting in front of you.
Right. Or I shouldn't pay paint, you know, all UFO or American cases that way, because I got a great couple of two-part article that was researched by George Knapp involving the Bigelow Ranch, you know, that financier Robert Bigelow, who bought this weird piece of territory in Utah, where all kinds of weird stuff was going on. There ran the gamut from UFOs to Bigfoot to interdimensional creatures to cattle mutilations, crop circles. It was everything, you know, and more that would happen, and they just could not put a label on it. You know, people want to hang a easy, you know, outsiders want to hang an easy hook on it, saying, well, it's all UFOs, and they're using their best scientific means to determine that it's none of the above, it's all of the above, and none of the above, and it is interactive, and it is anticipatory. It, you know, if they sent their research crews to the south part of the of this ranch
show up
to
in the
go
north
look
part.
For something, something would happen up in the north part where they weren't ready, or if something did happen, the equipment failed to record it. It seemed to play with them and their
expectations. And their expectations.
Their expectations, so that they were confounded by it over and over again. That they have to say it is somehow, it interacts with us and anticipates us.
Hey, Jerry.
As though it reads our minds.
Yeah, or it's a projection of our minds, and it's just sitting there as kind of dumb energy, and suddenly whatever, you know, it's kind of like the monster from the id from Forbidden Planet, you know. It's something that they deny, and it runs off and does things on its own. Jerry, I have to change the CD I'm recording this on.
Okay.
So what I usually do is play music in between, so I will play that Buchanan Brothers song, if you don't mind. And that's one of my favorites, too. And barring any horrible any occurrence... Wow, there's a skunk outside. God, what a horrible smell. But barring anything worse than a skunk being outside, we'll be back in a couple minutes here with Jerry Majeski. Here, Jerry, you can listen to this.
You better pray to the Lord when you see those flying saucers. It may be the coming of the judgment day. It's a sign, there's no doubt, of the trouble that's about. So I say, my friend, you'd better start to pray. They're a terrifying sight as they fly on day and night. It's a warning that we'd better mend our ways. You'd better pray to Lord, when you see those flying saucers, it may be the coming of the judgment day.
Yes, the Integratron, which was built by a UFO contactee named George Van Tassel out in the desert near Yucca Valley in California, is still there. It's still fenced off, and it's still owned by the same guy, Emil Canning, I think. He was going to sell it for a while, but I think he got an infusion of cash, or nobody wanted to buy it or something. And I think all of the Van Tassel family is actually dead now, even his daughters. There is one son-in-law left, Daniel Boone Van Tassel, and he still lives out there, right next to the Integratron, but he doesn't often come out to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Giant Rock split open like a couple of years ago, right?
Right.
Yeah,
it hasn't been any more splitting, has it?
No, no, but some people have come out and actually tried to clean up the graffiti that was all over it.
Oh, my.
There was sort of some graffiti on it before, but then when it broke open, there was this pure, smooth, white granite surface. Not really smooth, but pure white granite surface, and they just covered it within a week with all kinds of... graffiti. The best one was somebody wrote "Your roommate's ass hairs," which I thought was a really good one. If you got to cover Giant Rock with some sort of defilement, it'd at least be funny.
Yeah, I was hoping they were every time they showed like a little outdoor meeting of the Space Brothers and Spielberg's Taken. I was hoping the camera was going to pan like, you know, they kept showing like people out in the country, out in the desert somewhere, like at some like gathering like Giant Rock, but they never used the Giant Rock as a location, and I kept hoping they would.
Yeah, I did too. I'm trying to queue up a record so you can keep talking.
It is a fabulous place to visit, especially as we did right around twilight. That was very eerie and very beautiful and very moving to stand on the spot where so many had gathered, UFO followers, fans, detractors, of the 50s and 60s that all gathered, worshipped, hoped, fooled around
yeah.
on that very spot.
Yeah, it's a hallowed and haunted spot, to be sure, and there was only a little bit left of what little civilization was out there. The airstrip is still... might be usable, but it's got little rivulets where water, the occasional rainstorm has started to eat into it. And the Giant Rock Cafe, that little bit of floor that you saw there, it's even smaller now.
Mm-hmm.
Because people keep going out there with dune buggies and SUVs and Jeeps and stuff and motorcycles and running over it.
Mm-hmm.
So it just breaks it up into smaller and smaller and smaller pieces.
Yeah. Through my day job, I occasionally speak to a sales representative who lives in Yucca Valley, and I was brave enough one day to ask her to say, you know, I've been there and I've been the Giant Rock, and she asked me because I said that I knew about it through my friends, and she said, did your friends, were they out here? Was there a big UFO gathering there within the last year or so?
Really?
That's what she seemed to think, you know. And I said, well, gee, I'll have to ask my friends, i.e., you. who go out there occasionally if anybody had organized any kind of new gathering of people. It sounds like no. Most of the time, it's just been the partiers and the kind of the
yeah. There's a lot of shotgun shells and
right. But no large. Conclave of any kind, no convention.
I don't think so.
I
think you or I would have heard of it, or somebody we know would have heard of it.
Yeah, okay. But she seemed to think that there had been. And
maybe it was local.
But she was quite amused that I knew of Yucca Valley and the Giant Rock and
Landers.
And then she, you know, in the course of concluding our call, you know, she was going to send me, something relating to business work. But she said she said. I'll have the UFO drop it off to you, Jerry.
Actually,
I wasn't sure if she was giving me a hard time, just being a little tongue in cheek, or not. But I thought, a local.
There's a woman there that works for the High Desert Star, which is the newspaper for that area. I went and talked to her when I did a story on the Giant Rock splitting, and I found out she was collecting old contactee memorabilia and stories. And she had no real interest in the UFO phenomena, but she was really interested in the contactee thing. So she might actually know about it.
Yes.
And I've got her name mentioned in the article somewhere, so I can call her up and ask.
Yeah, please do, because I thought, darn, we missed it. Shoot.
Yeah.
Because there was some kind of gathering, and we still have to follow up on the possibility of getting our friend Peter to give us a little musical concert inside the Integratron.
Uh-huh.
I think last time we were together at the at that convention in Irvine that we were making some friends there with people who might make that happen someday. Do a little show inside the Integratron. That would be a dream come true, I think.
Yeah, that would for me. I've never been inside, and I've written about it and looked at it and been out there probably 30 or 40 times.
What was it supposed to do for a body, a human, if they were...
What does it do for a body? Well, what you do is you walk through one end and you go out the other end, and it's supposed to rejuvenate you.
Uh-huh.
What he said was that the Space Brothers wanted people to be able to reconcile their karma in one life, so that would involve making people live longer so they could get to nirvana, get to enlightenment quicker, or not quicker, but get to enlightenment in one life instead of having to die and be born and go through the whole thing again, not realizing that's what you're doing till you're an adult. So they wanted to short-circuit this a little bit or shorten it up a little bit by letting people live longer, and the Integratron was supposed to, I guess, reintegrate your cellular structure so that you aged a lot more slowly. He never actually finished it because he was still building it when he died. I mean, I think he'd stopped about a year before just because of bad health. But he actually had a heart attack. Somebody was channeling Ashtar or something after, I don't know if this is an apocryphal story or not, but was channeling Ashtar, who's the alien that George Van Tassel used to channel, or one of them. And they said something about George Van Tassel, and the alien said, "Yes, birth through induction, death through short circuit."
Ooh. Do you have any hot spots? I guess we were talking about locations like Giant Rock, the Integratron, these places. We're talking about Utah, and here I'm calling from Winona, Minnesota, and it seems, I don't know, since I've moved back here, I grew up here and come back and start gathering stories, start mentioning the people, what I'm into, and I say, is it just me, or does there seem to be a lot happening here?
Mm-hmm.
And is there a reason for that? That there's some interesting, you know, ghost activity that might be going on in Winona. There's a report of at least a man in black, not men, but a man in black on one of the local river islands here that has been sighted by several locals. A man in black with a pasty white face and large black eyes who seems to scare the hell out of people. But
how long has that story been going around?
I think at least several years.
Okay, but not like pre-40s, 30s or whatever.
Not as far as I know. I don't know.
It'd be interesting to find out if that had been going on or if there was, like, Indian tales or whatever.
Right. Well, there used to be Indian mounds here. In fact, probably about two blocks from where I am speaking right now and where I live, the riverfront used to be covered with Indian burial mounds, but they were destroyed, leveled, you know, thanks to our civilization moving in
the march
here.
Of progress, but there's nothing buried in them.
I associate things of that nature with sacred sites,
mm-hmm.
and the possibility that there's more going on here than meets the eye.
Yeah.
Of the white man.
Yeah, but there's nothing. Usually, there's nothing buried in those mounds.
Right.
They're just mounds.
Right.
And sometimes they have stuff inside them that build them up that are like they're full of seashells or something, thousands of miles from the seashore.
Right.
Just weirdness like that.
When you know what were they doing with copper, you know, or something, or what, you know. So yes, very very strange.
I can't remember how he brought this up, but in Jim Brandon's book Rebirth of Pan, he said that the Serpent Mound in Ohio, they were trying to find out how it was built. Then some people dug into it and they realized what it was strata from underneath the top of the ground had been squeezed up through the ground. That's what it looked like it happened. So like somebody had like opened a crack in the ground and this rock from underneath had pushed up through it like toothpaste,
wow.
But in the shape of a serpent with a little tongue and an eye and everything.
Interesting. I mentioned last hour researcher Casey Holt, he and I checked out a mound probably about an hour's drive from here that was shaped like a bird, or I should say a bird man, bird humanoid, whatever, near a Devil's Lake,
a Mothman,
Baraboo,
huh?
Wisconsin. So right, it reminded me a lot of Mothman, but it was like looked, you know, definitely humanoid, but his arms were extended as though in wing, like formation or something. But he's like 200 feet long from head to toe, and then about 100 feet from wingspan. But it's just like raised earth. It's not terribly detailed, but I guess
it wouldn't be.
The best time to look at it is during the winter, and like going up on top of one of the nearby hills and catching it when the sun is just right, and you can see you know how it stands out from the land, and that's that's a pretty good size thing there. And supposedly there's another one of a lynx and another one of golly, I can't remember what the other creature was, maybe like a bear or something like that. But and all they say is it was built by the people who came before the Indians.
and whoever those are.
Who are they? You know, and it's never like can't quite fathom what was this. It was just kind of odd that day too that we were visiting that site. When we were there in the evening after the sun had went down and trying to shine our flashlights on this mound, and suddenly the earth started shaking, and you know it was really strange to be sitting or standing on the mound and starting to feel the earth shake, and then to look about 50 feet away through the woods there was this railroad track, and this lone train engine went chugging through, and both Casey and I, we kind of look at each other and say, neither of us realized there was even a train track near here, and it just kind of lent to the eeriness, and also to just be sitting on that mound and starting to feel it vibrate. It didn't take the imagination a lot to think, like this starts to feel alive. Oh, it's just the train, but it's just that whole idea of the ground vibrating while you're on what could be a very mystical little spot of earth there.
I heard a story from Mario Pasquini when he was still alive that, and the guy he talked to about this is very much still alive. Paul Devereaux, the guy who investigates earth structures and megaliths and things in England and Europe. Uh-oh, we got the cutoff again. Okay, wait. We'll wait a second for Jerry, and if he doesn't come back, we'll play some strange music. Wait, let's see if there's anything here until Jerry comes back. You know what? There's like two versions of Lost in Space, the TV show, the theme, that I really like, and both of them were on this CD I got, the Brain in the Box CD. So let me put that one on until we hear Jerry come back here on Radio Mysterioso. And if he doesn't, I'll just call him. Okay.
Jerry?
I am here.
Oh, good. You're back.
Oh, dear, what fun. Still there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I was thinking about the late Jonathan Harris, Dr. Smith, who I guess had passed away during this last year.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was this last year. He's one of those people you thought were dead a long time ago.
Right,
right. Because you
haven't
heard about him.
Dr. Smith.
What I was going to say right before you about earthworks and earth mounds, you had heard, I had heard this story from, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
I heard this story from Mauro Pasolini before he died. He said that he had talked to Paul Devereaux, and he was doing you know who that is, right? He does research on mound structures and megalithic structures, et cetera, in Europe. All over the world, really, but he lives in Britain, so. He said that he was doing research on those hive mound things, or hive beehive-shaped tombs, as they're called.
Mm-hmm.
But he had done an experiment, and let me know if you've heard any more on this, where he had done something like, he had lit a fire in the mound with somebody's permission inside there when the smoke would come up, and then he had an oscillator in there with a very large speaker. And he would play different tones, and at some certain, like a middle E or something like that, the smoke, it must have hit a resonant frequency, because the smoke formed into a flat screen thing. Instead of spreading around, the vibrations of the air kept the smoke in a little column, like a flat plane.
Wow, no, I hadn't heard that.
And the correspondent, I mean, it's well within the range of the human voice to make this sound. So he was theorizing that it was used for divination or scrying or whatever, where you look into like water or a crystal ball, or in this case, a column of smoke that's flat in front of you, so you have a blank sort of area to look at, so visions can come up.
Fascinating.
He was theorizing that that's what those mounds were, not for burial or veneration, but for divination and as a sacred chamber. And I haven't heard any more on that, and I haven't had a chance to write to him or talk to him or anything about this, because that sounds like something that sounds like a fruitful area of research that I'd not heard anywhere else.
Yeah, I think probably the best American to reach on that would be Greg Little of he is working on an entire book of documenting all American mounds, those that still exist and those that we know have been obliterated. So kind of like a comprehensive, here they are, folks, you know, all the mounds that we know about on the North American continent, you know, in one book.
Yeah, he's written two incredibly, like, the top 10 of books or 20 or whatever you should have in your, at least one of them should be in the top 10. One of them is People of the Web, and the other one was what?
Delusion, something like illusions or dangerous illusions, or I can't remember what it was now.
My
phone can't reach my copious UFO shelf at the moment to see the spine of that book.
Anyone with the wherewithal to find it, those two UFO themed books by Gregory Little kind of takes the what used to be called the four-dimensional, or John Keel, or even Jacques Vallée, view of strange phenomena, and puts a really uniquely next-generation American spin on it. Not that John Keel isn't American, or Jacques Vallée isn't either, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of it either. I'm really embarrassed. But anyway, there's a lot of paranormal activity associated with UFO sightings that a lot of and interaction that people don't really know about usually. They just think people get abducted or they see something in the sky, but other things happen to people that see UFOs, and then people and families, they seem to have the things come back over and over and over again, not just to abduct them, but just they witness weird things constantly.
And yes, there's a couple of families here that I'm trying to get in touch with who have seemed to attract some of this phenomena and even in my own family, where a lot of us, you know, there's my mother and father and my younger brother, we all share intense interest in the topic, and it's not like we're all UFO buffs. I certainly am, but my mother and father just seem to have had a history of interaction with paranormal topics throughout their life. You know, my dad, when he was growing up here in Winona, his mother and father took him to see a psychic as a little boy, and this Mrs. Gustman, who was this, I assume, like, sounds German, but probably some German immigrant who was like a seer and could describe, you know, seeing, you know, angels and all these other entities, like protecting my dad. But the most interesting story that came out of their seeing this so-called psychic was this person helped them locate a valuable piece of family jewelry that had been lost. So she had, obviously, she was also able to remote view things as well. Uh-huh. But we're talking about somebody that would have been seen back in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And then, like my mom, you know, one of her coworkers used to live in a haunted house, and they just sort of accepted it. That, you know, they'd come to work the next day and say, you know, well, what happened last night, or you know, and they just sort of matter-of-factly, you know, describe, you know, what was going on inside their house.
Well, give us some paranormal porno. What was going on inside their house?
Yeah, I guess we'd lost touch with them, so I definitely want to know where that house is in Winona. But I've talked to a couple other people. Probably the most interesting ghost or I don't know entity story I've heard so far. Heard a gentleman describe a story locally here who he had. He and his sister had been really close. His sister unexpectedly died, and the remaining brother, the living brother, was very broken up, very emotional when it came time the holidays rolled around, and he was just totally bummed out during Christmas. But this particular gentleman, he had this Grinch doll, I guess based on whatever the cartoon or the movie, the Grinch movie, that he really enjoyed. And one day when he was in a particularly down mood during the Christmas time and he had the doll out, the doll started singing by itself. You know, you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. And he said there were no batteries in this Grinch. And
was there even a sound-making apparatus in this thing?
Uh-huh.
There wasn't?
It's supposed to be only battery-operated, and he found, he said that he interpreted as a sign from his late sister to lighten up. You know, most of the time when I tell the story to people, they say, that would make me shit my pants.
Yeah.
No, but he thought it was a sign as in, you know, since he enjoyed the Grinch and didn't think anything sinister about this doll, you know, animating by itself, he took it as a very positive sign where I suppose you or I would have a slightly different reaction.
Can you hear that?
Yes.
You can hear that music?
Faintly.
I found a copy of You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, while you were telling the story. Can you imagine a doll singing in this low voice?
Of spiders, you've got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39.5-foot pole.
Well, that's enough of that.
Oh, and the other thing about that kind of lent another touch to the whole story was the gentleman telling the story who it happened to, he looked very much like Chuck Jones, the man who animated the Dr. Seuss story. I thought, is there any coincidence here that this guy looks like Chuck Jones, and then Chuck Jones made the Grinch look like him? You know, when he, if you ever see pictures of Chuck Jones and look at the Grinch, you see there's a similarity there.
Yeah, he's got the big cheeks and the squinty eyes.
And then the kind of these, those kind of V-shaped, upside-down V-shaped eyebrows.
Uh-huh.
So I just thought that was, I don't think that was something anybody else would have noticed except me, like going, this guy looks like Chuck Jones, was very, very much involved with the Grinch, at least the TV version anyway. But that was probably the best paranormal porno I think I can pass along.
Have you ever heard stories of Ouija boards gone awry?
Yes. There's... You're ringing a bell, and I'm trying to remember, but somebody was tinkering with a Ouija board that I'd heard recently, and it was not it's not something to play with, kids.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I compare it. You know, just this toy, using it as a toy is sort of like running outside naked in the winter without any protection. You don't know what. That might be great. For Scandinavians and their health, but it's paranormal wise, you don't know what you're going to pick up when you open up certain doorways, and I sometimes think that's true with Ouija board.
Like in what way? Have you ever been able to recall what it was?
I can't
get into a little bit maybe why.
Right, or you've contacted a very unhappy or malevolent entity, as opposed to the family pet or some deceased dog who is trying to spell out arf arf on the Ouija board. Instead, you're saying somebody who says I want to kill you or something like that, or get out of here.
See, the thing is that a lot of the time people ascribe what's going on to the Ouija board to basically what they think automatic writing is, which is your subconscious talking to you, and you not realizing that it's your own subconscious and maybe coming back at you in some, with some sort of dream logic or nightmare logic.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes other things happen, which I'm not a witness to, but somebody told me their roommates were messing with one, and they left for a while, and she was home alone, and she saw the board come sliding out from underneath the bed by itself.
Mm-hmm.
So she pushed it back. She sat down again and started reading, and then out of a corner of her eye, whoop, it came right sliding right back out into the middle of the floor. And so she picked it up and said, and put her hand on it, and it's like, what's going on? And the thing went around very quickly saying, I need to talk. And she said, no, and threw it in the drawer and slammed the drawer closed. And it stayed in there, but then soon after that she moved out. And that was told me, firsthand, I guess, by somebody that actually experienced it. But that seems like a little bit more than your subconscious doing something. Unless your subconscious is involved in psychokinesis by mm-hmm. either by remote, from somewhere else or right in the same room or whatever. Well, when consciousness is involved, it doesn't matter where you are, what time it is, or, past or future, that doesn't matter. But... you may be opening a door not only to some other weirdness or a malevolent spirit or whatever you want to call it, but also to some part of yourself that you don't want to deal with, and that may take over.
Right. Whether that was that person's. I'm really curious about the Ouija board. I'm really down deep. I want to play with that Ouija board, but. So that's why it kept sliding out from under the bed, that they were making it somehow keep reappearing. I don't know.
Somebody asked me if I wanted to do the Aleister Crowley Alamantra working, where he saw that alien-looking thing in 1918.
Lamb?
Yeah, lamb. He asked if I wanted to do the lamb invocation, and I said no. you're right. I guess we'd better know.
Yeah. Somebody was sending me some information recently on Konstantin Raudive and the voices from the tapes. Raudive, okay.
I've got a CD called The Ghost Orchid, which has some of the Raudive stuff on it, and then also Raymond Bayless and some other people from Europe doing the same kind of thing, the electro voice phenomena. The recording voices from... Art Bell has these people on, but they're nowhere near as... I think scientific and studious and serious about it than Raudive was.
Yeah. How far did he take it? And did he have like disciples who've carried on the research? And because some of the stuff that's being passed on to me looks like a little bit older. I don't know. Are there people still carrying on his work, looking into spirit voices? Or I imagine now with all the different media, radio is going to go digital and. you know, this talk about, you know, setting your radio between stations to listen to the ghost voices or whatever. Well, you know, pretty soon we're going to have digital radio where you can't do that. But but then we've got all this other technology. Is are we picking up stuff from other things, or is it still, you know, basically, you know, setting your radio between the dials, or, you know, taping, you know, setting out a tape recorder to play, you know, taping silence or the, you know, just the room ambience overnight or something, and then suddenly playing it back and hearing something there where there wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, have you ever heard, have you ever delved into that a little? Because I'm, you know, the first thing I want to think of is what could be the possible explanation. The first thing I can think of is your electronics and your tape recorder is picking up radio signals,
mm-hmm.
even though they're really low. In some special case, you could probably pick up some radio signals. I think of that, and then I hear a recording where, and this happened to Rowdy, too, and some other people, where the voice would start talking to them about what they were doing and using their name.
Yes. And where it was very plain, you know, that it was interacting with them. Are we getting back to what we were talking about before with Robert Bigelow's Ranch, you know, where the phenomenon starts to play with you, you know. It knows you're there and is going to start to talk to you or say something back to you to kind of give you a clue that, you know, I hear you, but I'm not going to talk, you know, I'm not going to answer you exactly the way, you know, like, hello, how are you, you know, I'm fine,
yeah.
you know, how's the weather today type of conversation. Instead, it's much more cryptic and strange.
It's cryptic, and then sometimes it's just homily after homily. That's what a lot of channeling is like. It's just the most boring thing. This is another thing Mario said. You're supposed to be listening to the center of the universe, and it's boring as hell. A lot of it. So, you know, there's a lot of gibberish, but then sometimes there's these, you know, just like anything else, there was this quote from, I'll digress a little. Somebody was talking to Robert Heinlein, I think at some convention I'd heard this, and he said, well, Mr. Heinlein, don't you think that 99% of science fiction is shit? And he said, young man, 99% of everything is shit. Which is an even high, I think there's an even higher, like 99.9% in the paranormal and UFO arena. 99.9% of it is either not important, is shit, or is specifically misleading you.
Mm-hmm. Right, either it's on purpose or it's just, it's just going to mess you up, you know, kind of set you off track, either on purpose or accidentally.
Hey, we've got 5 minutes. Do you want to hear some of that Frank Strangis?
Frank Strangis, yes.
Frank
Strangis. I think I went to a Frank Strangis lecture in Minneapolis about 6 years ago. And
he's still running around.
Well, at least that was 6 years ago that he was. Still talking about... who was his friend in the
Four.
In his Pentagon contact, yes.
Have you ever seen those pictures in The Stranger at the Pentagon or Flying Saucer Armor of Valiant Thor?
Yes.
It's like some really handsome guy, and I think those pictures were taken at meetings at Howard Menger's farm in the 1950s, early 60s. You ever notice that woman right behind him? She's really cute, that blonde one. Who's that one? I want to know who that is.
Ooh, yeah, hubba hubba. I'd love to hear some Frank Strangis.
Okay, there'll probably be a pause of a couple seconds because the turntable is about 10 feet away from me. That's the kind of place we're running here. But we'll be right back with Jerry Majeski and probably talk to him for a little bit before the next show comes in if they're not on time, which usually they're not. So we'll see. Okay, Jerry, here's Frank Strangis on 45 RPM.
For many years, this planet has been under constant surveillance and observation. Unknown forces have been responsible for producing strange and unusual phenomena. Many objects have been sighted with the naked eye, caught by the high-speed shutters of military cameras, and tracked by radar. These unusual aerial objects, known as unidentified flying objects as well as flying saucers, have appeared in various shapes, sizes, and colors. Some have appeared fuzzy or blurred, while others have shone brighter than the stars. Still others were self-luminous or dull, reflecting, and even transparent at will. My investigation, which is reflected in the book Flying Saucerama, as well as in our UFO documentary film Phenomena 77, clearly indicates that UFOs are being constantly sighted in the skies above every nation under the sun. Their various shapes include round, oval, square, triangular, saucer and bell-shaped, as well as cigar-shaped. The sizes of certain UFOs stagger the imagination. Unknown flying objects are sighted both day and night as they travel at above supersonic speeds, while others float silently, deliberately, and mysteriously above the horizon. UFOs have also been tracked by civilian experts at speeds exceeding 20,000 miles per hour in our atmosphere without disintegrating. They perform unbelievable feats of aerial maneuvers, violating every rule and regulation of air traffic control, while they completely defy established laws of aerodynamics. In the opinion of the military, UFOs do not exist, yet UFOs have been classified as skyhooks, meteorites, stars, planets, reflections, high-flying Canadian geese, cloud formations, temperature inversions, weather balloons, satellites, space junk, white paper, and many other explanations that in some cases justify such an interpretation. Something has been up there for a long time. Something that is recorded in the sign language of the ancients. Some strange objects called flying shields by the early Romans, luminous discs by the Greeks. The ancient Chinese records reveal that UFOs were sighted and recorded by men whose sole task it was to maintain accurate events of strange and unusual happenings in their particular generation. The Holy Bible calls attention to UFOs by referring to them as the wheel in the middle of the wheel by Ezekiel, the flying roll or scroll by Zechariah. Job poses a challenging question when he asks, "Who are these that fly from cloud to cloud as doves to their nests?" As we travel from the musty pages of prehistory into the atomic age, we find ourselves confronted with these perplexing questions. What are flying saucers? Where have they come from? What is their purpose? Perhaps the following events will enlighten you. The time, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The date, Tuesday, June 24th, 1947. The place, 9,200 feet above Mineral, Washington, making a 180-degree turn toward a forbidden plateau of Mount Rainier. The pilot, Kenneth Arnold, a relief deputy federal United States Marshal, a deputy sheriff for Ada County, Idaho. An experienced flyer who logged more than 4,000 hours of flying time over mountainous country over a 3-year period. Then it happened. A tremendous, bright flash of light lit up the complete surface of his plane. He thought he was very close to a collision with another plane. He looked to the right, then he looked to the left, and then up, and then down, and then decided that he had been buzzed by a P-51. Then suddenly, without warning, it happened again. This time, he caught the direction from which it came. He observed, far to the left and toward the north, a formation of very bright objects coming from the vicinity of Mount Baker, flying perilously close to the mountaintops at tremendous speeds. The strange formation flew directly in front of his plane. They were flying diagonally in an echelon formation, with a larger gap in their echelon between the first four and the last five. After maneuvering back and forth, the last group of these strange, silvery, saucer-shaped objects seemed to gather speed as well as altitude at a point beyond the southwest crest of Mount Adams. Then, after another sharp maneuver, shot off into the blue at speeds that completely stagger the imagination. Thus was framed the term which was to make headlines throughout the civilized world, the term flying saucers. Who are these people who see UFOs? Have any public officials, scientists, or military men made such statements pertaining to UFOs? The answer is quite apparent. Former Central Intelligence Agency Chief Admiral R.H. Hillenkoetter stated, "It is high time that this UFO secrecy is ended. It is imperative that we learn where UFOs come from and what their purpose is." Dr. J.J. Kalizowski, cosmic ray scientist for the United States Navy projects, who with two other scientists sighted a cigar-shaped UFO near Minneapolis, Minnesota, stated, "They were strange, terrifically fast. I think that the government should set up a 24-hour alert with radar, telescope, sky cameras, and other instruments." Then the report from Captain Richard Addix, TWA pilot, who with a full crew and seven passengers saw a glowing UFO pacing their airline near South Bend, Indiana, stated, "Before this, I wasn't convinced by saucer reports. Now I know that they exist." An interesting report from William Lear, winner of the Collier Aviation Trophy and president of Lear Aircraft Corporation of California, who sighted a UFO in bright daylight. He said, "I believe that flying saucers come from outer space and are piloted by beings of a superior race." Hermann Oberth, co-designer of the V-2 rocket, said, "It is my thesis that flying saucers come from other worlds outside our solar system." Albert M. Chopp, former Air Force press officer in charge of UFO information at the Pentagon, stated, "One thing is absolutely certain. We are being watched by beings from outer space." Yes, my friend, this is an accumulation of statements by men who cannot be categorized as kooks. These are men of character, men in whose hands has been placed tremendous responsibility, even to maintaining the general security of our nation. But what of other countries? UFOs have totally ignored international boundaries. Argentina, England, Canada, Africa, New Zealand, Germany, Russia, Portugal, Thailand, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Mexico, Israel, Cuba, Italy, France, China, Japan, Brazil, Switzerland, India, Australia, as well as every other nation under the sun, have reported UFOs in their skies. It seems rather strange that in the face of all these reports, still a shroud of secrecy engulfs the UFO mystery. The reason for this has been presented as follows. The military clearly explains that in no uncertain terms, to date, only 7.7% of the many thousands of UFO sightings are still unexplainable. They also maintain that they have no evidence that UFOs are interplanetary or pose any potential threat to the security of the United States. In a recent letter to me, they stated that as an act of faith, F-A-I-T-H, UFOs can be considered manned or unmanned extraterrestrial craft, but as a scientific fact, there has been no authentic evidence, scientific or otherwise, presented to or discovered by the Air Force to support this conclusion. And yet, reports still pour in. People from every rank and file, from every cultural and ethnic origin, from every station of life, continue to report seeing and photographing UFOs. The great mystery continues to deepen. A solution is being carefully and analytically sought by honest researchers and investigators who are capable of executing such an assignment with an open mind. That is, a mind that is totally free from any outside influence of either political or military pressure. The flying saucer mystery has likewise had a profound effect upon religious leaders throughout the entire world. Some of them take the position that if UFOs are proven to be interplanetary, the Holy Bible would be rendered ineffective, while others maintain that UFOs would diminish the purpose and the plan of Almighty God for this planet Earth. It is quite childish to attempt to limit the omnipresence as well as the omniscience of the great Creator. Furthermore, it might well be that the appearance of UFOs in our skies might be in keeping with the last day prophecies, such as, "In the last days there shall be signs in the skies, signs in the stars, signs in the sun and in the moon. Strange sights and fearful signs shall appear in the heavens." Perhaps what this planet really needs is something that will jolt us out of our self-centered, selfish outlook on life in general. But time will tell. Time is yet to be conquered by man. But when the time is right, perhaps the greatest revelation of all time will dawn upon us. Yes, my friend, this might very well be the year. This could be the day that no earthly power, governmental or otherwise, will be able to keep the secret of the saucers from the human family on this, the third planet from the sun. Until then, keep looking up, search the heavens, be alert at all times, and remember, truth has a habit of marching on.
Here, how'd you like that, Jerry?
I love that, how truth marches on there. The truth, there's a different spin on the truth is out there, instead the truth marches on, which kind of can imply several different things, like, there it goes down the street, you try and catch up with it. or it's playing, you know, musical instruments, like a marching band or something. The truth marches on.
I thought it was interesting that he mentioned John Lear's father.
Yes, Lear being very much involved with some of the deepest, darkest things we've been talking about on and off the air, Greg, haven't we?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, and also I noticed very at the very beginning mentioned there was the Minneapolis, Minnesota, so we had a little bit of some personal connections there between Minnesota and On Record there and you, so thank you for playing that.
Sure, and I'll try and send you a recording of the whole thing. I'll put it on a CD. And I should color copy the cover too. It's a beautiful cover. It's like blue and it looks very 1960s, early 60s. some sort of drawing or painting or something. Probably the next show will be coming in a few minutes. So in that time, you always have like friends of yours or girlfriends or whatever that will ask you, anybody we know, why are you interested in this kind of thing, and why do you keep being interested in it? If there's, you know, there's pretty obviously, or at least obviously to most people, not going to be any solutions. So why do you keep doing it?
Curious as hell. And
yeah, but why not curious about, paramecians or something, why the government wants to listen to everything that we say and do, and track all our purchases and all that. Why be interested in UFOs and the paranormal?
Good. For me, it goes all the way back to childhood, and why I was attracted to it. It's just so colorful and cool. It's like a comic book come to life, you know, in many, many ways. You kind of have walked between the doorway from consensus boring reality into a place where anything can happen, where UFOs and aliens are here already, or they're visiting us, and their ships look like flying Christmas trees, and I guess it's a good place to jump off into the thickest of the thick of what could be. We don't have a lot of hard evidence, but there sure are a lot of diving boards, you know, whether you want to dive into the UFO stuff, into Bigfoot, into ghosts, or telekinesis, or whatever. There's sure some good diving boards, but I can't guarantee you're going to land in the truth when you dive off that diving board. You're going to be swimming in a lot of something. We've already alluded to what some of that something you'll be swimming through will be, but it's really rewarding, though, to every once in a while come across that case or that witness that you say, this person, I feel, is telling the truth. The truth as they see it, and what they've seen is something very, very bizarre, whether it was a ghost that materialized in front of their face for a full minute, you know, unmistakably, you know, in your face, or somebody who is really skeptical, who is really not into UFOs like I am, who suddenly has an in-your-face UFO sighting and otherwise doesn't give a damn about the whole rest of the UFO subject, but they just say, darn, I saw this, and please, can I tell this to you? Then you feel like you've found that pitch blend, you know, whatever, that after you've, you know.
Having a connection with somebody on that level.
On that level, and then to find some, that kernel of truth, and also it's accessible to people, ordinary schmucks like you and me, that we might stumble on something as much as Edgar Mitchell's team or Bigelow's, all the money he's pumping into this ranch that he's bought. Greg, you and I could stumble across something just as well, but we might just keep stumbling into nothing. But I think we've stumbled into enough things that keep us going to look for the next big thing or the next little thing that could be a big thing.
Yeah, well, it's a fun game, and it's a lot more interesting than most of the games people get involved in while stuck incarnate on this planet, I guess.
Right, and I think we're trying to look at what happens, what is this reality, and what is beyond it, and now quantum physics is looking at the same thing, so it's like, well, and religion's always been that way, so I guess the other parts of reality are catching up to that whole notion that there's more to things than what's on the surface.
Okay.
So we don't seem quite as far out as we once did. We just have to find the right words that people can kind of not be scared away by the whole topic.
Right, and find people that have the words that can possibly work on it on another level and bring it back to show us, like some of these people in the Scientific Exploration Society.
Mm-hmm. And people from different...
Scientific Exploration, I'm sorry.
People from different walks of life, too, who are talking to each other. You know, the metaphysicists are talking to the hard scientists and things
right.
like that. I find that pretty encouraging that there is a lot of crosstalk now, and the doors are a little more open than they used to be, you know, between all these disciplines to say, there might be more than one answer, and it might take more than one skill or one area of expertise to try and get at any of this. We've got to start talking to each other, you know, whether it's a cop who has had, an in-your-face sighting onto, something much more like some spiritual encounter somebody's had in the middle of the night in their bedroom,
Right. Okay, Jerry, it was great talking to you, and I want to have you back on again. And next time, instead of telling you to come on a half hour before the show comes on, we can have a huge slate of things to talk about. I guess we weren't really short of subjects tonight.
No, we weren't. And next time, I'd like to talk about, we have a prominent ghost here in the city of Winona at St. Mary's College. And so that's been getting some publicity in the last couple of years, but it's gone on for several decades. And I really want to look into that more because, as we mentioned earlier in the interview, the major media just hangs on to certain catchphrases, and in the case of ghost sightings on a college campus, it becomes student pranks.
Yeah, of course.
and college rumor. Just like we were talking about before, where if somebody has said to see a little green man, that equals crackpot or,
Yeah, well, it's
made up, so...
21st century swamp gas.
That's right.
Just like the students in Michigan when J. Allen Hynek had to go out there and say it was swamp gas.
That's right. It's just available and sold in different forms under different names, but it's still a good old swamp gas.
Okay, Jerry. Thanks for being on with us tonight and staying up so late where you are. And
well, all right. Well, thank you. And Casey, if you're listening, take care. We love you and we miss you.
Yes, most definitely. Play some music out, and we'll see you next week, 8 to 10 p.m. here on Radio Mysterioso. And thanks again, Jerry.
Thank you, Greg.
All right.
Bye.